this is something I wanted to talk about too, because I have people reaching out to me, and I never thought this was going to happen, where they're like, hey, how did you become successful? You know, what kind of camera do you use? What kind of this and that? And you know, what it really boils down to is this right here, this phone. 95% of my content on my page is shot with an iPhone.
Welcome to the Shields Outdoors Podcast, your source for information on hunting, fishing, and all of your outdoor passions.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Shields Outdoors Podcast. Mike Anderson here, along with Solomon, Ashley. How are you guys doing today?
Just fantastic.
Yeah, doing awesome. How are you, Mike?
I'm good. It's a great day. You know, I'd be doing a little better if the weather cooperated a little more as an avid ice angler. You know, I mean, of course, I'm originally from Minnesota, so of course I'm going to talk about the weather right away. But yeah,
or if it was the weekend, because you have fun plans.
Yes, I
you're
do
probably
have
just thinking about the weekend.
I am. I'm in weekend mode already. So I am headed to Upper Red Lake this weekend. Very excited about it. On a mission to catch 100 crappie. That's my goal. So I'm going to be armed with a StrikeMaster 40 volt and 3 batteries and a live scope. And I'll probably take out the wife's Jeep so I can be super mobile. And I'm just going to go on a search and destroy and then release most of them mission. But it's going to be super fun. I was out there earlier this year. We were targeting walleye for the most part. Did pretty good, but man, I mean, being the social media guy for Shields Outdoors, like, I see all these pictures of people like smashing crappie on Red Lake, and it's like, ooh, I want to do that. You know, I spend a lot of time targeting crappie, and I've actually done pretty well this winter, but those Red Lake ones are a different beast, and I'm definitely looking forward to it. So, Solomon, you know, yep. for the people that aren't watching this on YouTube, I highly recommend you do it. It's fun to watch it on YouTube, but he's kind of red right now. So,
you got a
ridiculous farmer's tan, like impressive level farmer's tan. So yeah,
it just doesn't look that bad. It's gotten better.
Yeah. Let us know how that happened.
Well, the Shields Creative Media team went to Arizona to film some content and a commercial, and then right after that, I went on a mission trip to Jamaica and got a little fried on the last day.
Got your sunscreen.
The sunscreen went on the face,
sun shirt,
and not the arms.
Okay,
that's about it. Yeah, didn't have my sun shirt on.
Yeah, got to get that sun shirt. So yeah, you go from Fargo, North Dakota, for months to Arizona and then to Jamaica. A little bit of,
and there's no tanning for me. It's super white and super red.
We're just gonna go ahead and get that base burn out of the way.
Just prepping for the summer. It's time on the boat.
So you're saying I should bring some sunscreen to Mexico?
Yes.
I would recommend it. I mean, unless you're gonna do that fake bacon stuff, but you know, fake, you do right. You
no, I will definitely bring sunscreen. I'm a very big sunscreen advocate.
There you go.
Okay, that's a solid
plan.
So
I should have told you.
Well, I'm just stubborn anyway. I probably wouldn't have put it on, even if I was handed it. I'd just be like, no, it's all right.
I'll be good.
Yeah, I mean, I should probably bring sunscreen this weekend too, because some of my worst sunburns are actually ice fishing when you're outside running and gunning and stuff, and you don't, like, it's cold. You don't think about sunscreen, but then like all of that reflection, it gets bad.
So speaking of fishing,
we've got a pretty cool guest today. His name is Josh Walkow. He's the Appleton Shields Pro Staff member. He's a pro staff for Garmin. Pretty handy with his cell phone and a live scope. You put that combination together and you get some pretty cool content. So Josh, how you doing today?
Good. How you doing today?
Oh, doing great. Well, I mean, we just gave our little spiel, so you kind of have an idea on how we're doing today. But you want to just so we've had you on the podcast before, but it's been a little bit of a while now. So you want to mind just giving us a little brief introduction, what you're all about?
Yeah. So Josh Waka, I'm located in central Wisconsin. You can find me on social media, Josh Legacy Outdoors, Instagram, Facebook, YouTube. Biggest presence on Instagram is where you're going to see all my stuff. And that's also where, you know, you and I have done a lot of interacting, and why, you know, I became a part of the Appleton Shields Pro Staff community over there to help create content for the store. And that's kind of what my role is for Pro Staff with Appleton Shields, is to help create content to promote the store and to get people excited about fishing. And so on a weekly basis, I am generating, creating content, posting content for folks to interact with. And it's a whole plethora of different things that I post about. You know, it's lifestyle stuff. It's me catching fish. It's not tying videos. It's you name it, but it's mostly centered around fishing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. For those that don't follow Josh on Instagram and YouTube now, but Instagram, especially, like, he's pretty hungry out there. You know, you put out some great content, and like, I remember the first time that I saw any photos from you, it was this really cool crappie shot where like you caught a real nice crappie and it had its mouth open, and you were sitting in the background with your mouth open, just like, ah, and it was just like, it's one of those pictures that's like, oh yeah, this is really cool. Hey, so I reached out, hey, can I use this? Yeah, go ahead, for sure. And then you just pretty much like was so persistent. You just like literally never left our Shields DMs, just, and then it just grew from there. So on, you know what? I'm glad you did too. So it's been a cool ride so far. And I'm really excited to see what we have coming up in store too.
Yep. There's hopefully some pretty exciting things on the horizon that we get to do that people are really going to want to see. That's my little teaser.
There we go.
And people should go back and listen to, it's like episode 113. I went back and listened.
Same.
So
I did as well.
We dug in the archives, Mike.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
We dug in there and listened. And so it's all about providing value.
Yes,
to
absolutely.
Guy, so
I did not go back and listen, but I dug into the archives of my brain to remember what we talked about.
We weren't here.
So it's all right up here.
Maybe I should have listened to it.
Yeah, come on. You didn't read the briefing?
Oops.
Oh, dang. All right. Well, we'll give this a shot anyways. We'll see how it goes. Yeah. Oh, so I would assume that, you know, being in Wisconsin, not too far away from, you know, North Dakota, Minnesota, and that, we've had a really weird winter. So can you just talk a little bit about your ice fishing so far with how the weather has cooperated or not cooperated and how it's affected your fishing?
Yeah, it has not cooperated. You know, typically in this part of the ice belt, if you will, we can start anywhere from late November to early December is our typical starting point. So right after our gun deer season, you can usually start finding some safe ice on some local potholes, ponds, and whatnot. And this year it was just, we had that nice cold snap, made some good ice, and I was able to get out. And then after that, it just went downhill. So there was a lot of time in limbo of, you know, not a lot of ice fishing, trying to figure out what content to do, and then creating some content, working with Garmin on some cool products that, you know, you guys got to share that I can bring up with a little bit here as well. And, but also, you know, Mike, another thing that I found out with is we didn't have a lot of snow, not a lot of ice. So another thing that I found out when we finally got out on the water, on the ice, was that the fish were not in their typical winterly pattern locations. So if you think about like a basin crappie in this neck of the woods, they're going to be there this time of year, you know, February. They're going to be out in those basins just roaming around. And a couple weeks ago, I was out with my buddy fishing, and we just struggled to find them. We struggled to find them. And lo and behold, there was still some weeds holding on because we didn't have that snow to choke them out and that thick ice. And it took us a while, but we finally found them. And yeah, I think a lot of anglers are echoing that same thing of, the fish aren't where they typically are, and they're still fishing those early season spots, even though it was February. So it's just been a roller coaster year, been really weird. Been lucky enough to get out and have some buddies with some UTVs and ATVs to get out to new locations that you'd have a hard time to get to walking, and been able to put some fish on the ice. And the most important thing, which my son reminds me all the time, is we've been able to have a few fish fries.
Oh, there you go. Perfect. Yeah, in my ice fishing year, it's been interesting, because like I haven't made it out a whole lot, but the times that I have made it out, I've been able to do pretty well. Traffic wise, there's a lot less people on the ice. You know, you can't really get the wheelhouses out, so there's less fishing pressure, and I've noticed like more numbers of fish when I've been able to go out. But one day stuck out in particular. It was one where my wife had plans to go on this curling tournament with her gal friends. So that meant I had a weekend with the girls. So I got to choose what I wanted to do. So naturally, I'm going to take them fishing. So I was like, okay, I'm going to find myself a good panfish lake so they can catch like 100 sunfish and keep them entertained and stuff. So I reached out to my buddy Matt from the Fargo Shields Outdoor page, and I'm like, Matt, where can I go to get on hundreds of sunfish? And he's like, oh, I got the perfect spot for you. I was there a couple weeks ago. We were in the fish were still in the weeds, and you know, just find the edge of that weed line, you'll be golden. So took his advice, went to the spot, found the weed line, put the camera down. Weeds were still fairly green. So I was like, all right, I'm feeling pretty good. Set up all my stuff, and we didn't catch a dang thing there. Actually, we caught two things. We caught 1 3-pound pike on a hot dog, because the guy that went with me, his name is Gus. Actually, he's from Shields here. He's a copywriter, and I wanted to get him out ice fishing. I was like, you can't talk about ice fishing unless you go ice fishing. So you're gonna come with me. And he was in charge of bringing the big bait for the tip ups, and he definitely forgot them in his freezer at home. So, but thankfully I had brought two hot dogs, and I caught a pike on a hot dog, and the kids ate that up. And then he ended up catching like probably a 4-pound bass or so. And if you've never caught a 4-pound bass on like a panfish setup, it's a lot of fun. But anyways, like the panfish weren't there. So I had to go on a little search mission after my 3-year-old daughter had like a complete meltdown. And then I finally got her down for a nap so I could go search. And we actually found them in the basin. So it really varies like lake by lake. You know, you can have that mentality like, okay, I'm going to go search where I think they are. I'm going to go search where, you know, if you don't find them, don't be afraid to go in shallow. So, but yeah, I mean, don't be afraid to drill some holes out there is basically what I'm getting at.
Well, I got that Strike Master as well. And so go through batteries and pop some holes until you find the fish.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It also helps to have forward facing sonar. So I bet you can attest to that, right?
Oh yeah. You know, Garmin saved me a couple times. My first outing with my buddy, we were doing that same thing, and we were struggling, and we found some submerged wood in this flowage, and the fish were hanging tight to that. And as soon as we found that, made the whole trip. We were able to put some fish on the ice and have a nice little fish fry.
There you go. Perfect. So, I mean, being a pro staff for Garmin, obviously you get some access to some really cool stuff. Can you just talk about like your fishing style or your fishing success experience pre-Garmin versus post-Garmin?
Yeah, so, you know, I think the biggest player in all this is going to be, you know, LiveScope. And especially on the ice, if you think about moving around on the ice, it's a little bit more difficult to move around on the ice versus around in a boat. You just can't just say, oh, I'm going to go over there and point the boat that way with the trolling motor and move. You got to physically pick up your auger and start punching holes. So when you have LiveScope, and I have the Garmin LiveScope bundle, you're able to point your LiveScope transducer in any direction that you want, and you can start looking for fish or looking for structure, looking for weed edges, looking for wood. And it eliminates the time of searching and drilling. Because if your traditional sonar, you know, you put the sonar down and you're only seeing that small cone right beneath the hole, versus, you know, your forward facing sonar, you're able to pan 360 degrees, and depending on your depth, you can see 100 feet out. So it was a complete game changer and eliminated wasted time, I guess you could say, out on the water, and ultimately it is provided to be very successful for me and my buddy who also has LiveScope to go out and make the most use of your time is really what it came down to.
Now, how far does that LiveScope actually like see? What's the distance? Do you know?
Yeah, I mean, for me, it really depends on the distance, how deep it is, and the water clarity. And, you know, once you get out past a certain point, you lose certain detail. You can tell if there's a rock wall or a weed line there. But, I mean, I can see out 80, 100 feet, no problem with my setup, and see what's going on out there.
So do you have like a tactic of like you go and you pick a spot where you think is going to be good?
Yeah. And I mean, you have your historical spots, right? Like Mike, you know what I'm talking about? You know, like those traditionally produce this time of year on this spot, and you have it saved on your phone or Navionics or whatever have you. But when you're exploring new water, you know, a key thing that I always do is in the past several years, I got to give a shout out to my buddy Travis. We always fish in pairs. Because one guy on the auger, one guy on the live scope, and you can actually say, hey, you know, go this way, 15 feet, 35 feet. And you can see once he punches a hole, you can see the slush going down and you can see the auger poke beneath the ice. And yeah, you're right on it. Or no, you need to come back. So that's one tactic that I always do and I have done this year is make sure you fish in pairs. And not only for the safety reason, but to eliminate time on the water and make sure you can find the fish.
Mm-hmm. So, Mike, you got to teach those little girls how to drill some holes.
Yeah, how to carry the auger. Hey, Ava, bring that auger over here.
Yeah.
Oh, it's not that heavy. Come on. You can do it. Just drag it. No, I attest to that 100%. Like, fishing in pairs is so much more efficient because, like, honestly, I've done a lot of my fishing solo this year because, like, I'll go out. My in-laws live on a lake, so I have a built-in babysitter there, and I can go out in the mornings, and nobody else really likes to go out there with me. They don't quite have that same hunger or that same drive, and because, like, this past weekend, I was kind of crazy because it was, like, I don't know, it was about 10 degrees when I woke up, and it was, like, 30 to 40 mile an hour wind, and I couldn't convince anyone to go with me, but I was committed, like, absolutely 100% committed. I'm going to the point where, like, I tried to start the four-wheeler, and it didn't work, like the battery was dead, so I switched to the snowmobile, and there really isn't any snow out there except there's little tiny pockets here and there, so I'd like have to drive side to side to like little snow pockets to like lubricate the track and stuff, but that I was going and I found the fish though. But what happens is like sometimes they move a lot. Like I was doing basin fishing for crappie and they just weren't really stationary. So I'd go and I'd find them and I'd drill a hole and then they were past the hole. And then I would try and figure out where they're at. And then I would think I was really close and then I'd start dropping down and then they'd be a little bit past me and I would cuss and then I would drill another three or four holes and then I would finally pick one off. And you know, to do that with two people though, it just becomes so much more efficient.
Right.
So, yeah, I feel you there.
Right there. Yeah.
Or lay a grid down. You know, another thing that me and my buddies do is we lay a grid down and, you know, they're going to be cruising, you know, they're going to be roaming and just lay a grid down so you can hop over to the next hole and try and get in front of them. Because when they come through, they don't really stop for anything unless your bait's there. So they're just going to keep on moving by.
Yep. And then you fishing with two people, like you get it up and then the next person can drop it down immediately when you get that fish out and you can keep something in front of that school. And then they tend to hang around a little bit longer too.
So speaking of tips, like turning the grid on, I'm going to pretend like I'm not one of the people that I'm going to refer to, but to the people that have live sonar and don't know how to use it very well, what, and this probably overlaps to open water too, but like in what circumstances are you using like forward versus down versus scout, like in those circumstances, when are you using those different modes?
Yeah, I've found myself using forward most of the time just because I'm always on the move. And that's the search mode for me, forward, so that I can pan around in all directions. The only time this winter and last winter too, where I used the down mode was when I'm in a shack and I know I'm not going to be moving. And also another thing I use that for too, is I can orient the transducer this way so that we had three people in the same shack all visible on one LiveScope unit. So you can all jig the same screen and each one can see their own bait, and then the fish come through and everyone can get a shot at seeing their bait and the fish on LiveScope. So those are really the two modes that I use the most.
That was the story of my ice fishing this year. The two times I did get out, it was thick enough-ish to get out the bigger shack, and it was more of a set it down in the historical spot and hope there was fish there. So we did that, and then we set the sonar in that down mode where we could have a couple guys seeing it. But there was not a lot of fish there at the time, which was unfortunate. But, hey, we got out. So
yeah. I mean, what that LiveScope is really good for is, like, finding the spot on the spot. You know, like, when you're starting out, you're looking, you know, mapping's your number one tool. Finding those inside turns or those humps or those drop-offs and things like that. And it's like, okay, I think this is a high percentage area for fish. You drop it down, then you got LiveScope. You can see 100, 150 feet, whatever. Scan it around, find the spot on the spot, then set up your house. Mm-hmm. Or, like, if you're using multiple LiveScopes and one of them dies, like mine did on Winnipeg last year. So I was out fishing with my brother, and my unit just died. It was like there was probably an hour left of the day, and I either didn't properly charge it or whatever happened. I got a dead sonar. So, like, he's going around, he's scanning, looking around. He's like, oh, there's a fish like 40 foot over there. We got a hole. It should be really close to that hole. So he, like, directed me. So he's like, okay, put your bait down, drop it. Okay, you're in the zone, start jigging. Okay, that fish is engaged. So he's like, all right, he's coming at you. Start taking the bait away. And, like, I literally caught the fish with him directing me from 30 to 40 feet away. That's and awesome. It was like a 24 inch walleye. Wow. I was like, this is really cool.
Very cool.
So, yeah.
So what do you have in your box right now? What are you taking with you when you're out?
Well, I got a, it's right there. I should go grab it. Yeah, well, let me grab it. All right. So here's my box. I keep all of my ice fishing stuff. I got my drone, my camera, my tripods, all that stuff in my office here so that I can keep everything organized and make sure it doesn't get all wet and rusty. But here's a nice little assortment of my jigs that I got right now. And Mike, you can chime in on this one, but I find myself, I have multiple poles that I use. I find myself, I'll tie one of my favorite ones on, and if I don't lose that thing stays tied on all winter. I'm very guilty of that for a specific pull. Yeah, I got some VMC in here. I got some, what else we got here? Some clam. On the other side, I got a few spoons and whatnot. But these jig boxes are nice.
They are legit. Yeah. I'll give you that.
And if you drop it in the water, it floats.
Oh, nice. Yeah.
Mike.
Yeah, if you didn't listen to the last episode, they're hinting at me dropping my phone down the hole. So, yeah, still a little bit sore about that. Mm-hmm. That one didn't float. Nope. No, and it didn't sink at a rate that allowed me to get my hand down there either. I was shoulder deep in that hole and I could just about got it, but I did not.
I listened to that, and my wife, she brought it up because I'm guilty. I dropped a phone in the water. Thankfully, it was only about 5 feet deep, and I managed to tie on a Salmo chubby darter, and I hooked the edge of the case with a treble hook and brought that thing up. So that, I'm guilty too.
Yeah, and so we put out a piece of content like a few weeks after I did this, and it gave me like serious anxiety because your phone was like dangerously close to the hole. So, and it's so this is Garmin related too. It's a really cool little unit for people that, you know, they either just want to get into fishing and need a cost-effective way to have a transducer, or they just, you know, want to try something different. So you want to talk to us a little bit about that video?
Yeah. So I used what was called a Garmin Striker Cast, and it's a castable GPS unit, sonar unit that you can, and is initially intended for tying on to a rod, casting it out, and then being able to see what's out in front of you. So where I found that to be most useful would be for bank fishermen or shore fishermen or a pond fisherman that want to know what's out there. They want to know what type of structure they're fishing or if there's fish out there. And so there's applications that you could use that for ice fishing. So you can put that, I call it like the blue bobber because I have the GPS version one, in the hole, and it's a wireless sonar device that connects via Bluetooth to your phone via the Striker app. And then you can see your traditional sonar wheel like you can for a Markham or a Vexlar and see the bottom and you can see the fish on it. And so what Mike's talking about is I had my phone on a tripod and I had it what about this far away from the hull because I wanted to get it all in one because I was recording this. And
you only have so much real estate when you're shooting vertical video. So it has to be close. But man, right. I looked at that and I was like, oh, one wrong move and that phone is gone, man. Don't do it. It's not worth it.
Well, and I posted that video and I think it got 900,000 views or something like that on my Instagram. So people were relating to it. They were roasting me a little bit in the comments about how can you do that with your phone and this and that and tie some flotation to that because if it goes in, it's going down. And they were all true. But I have a pretty cool setup that you guys will be seeing pretty soon on my Instagram that I have put together with a phone holder, a battery charger and whatnot, and that thing will not sink and it's going to provide battery life and whatnot. But the cool part about that Striker Cast is I think what it's geared most towards is the either entry-level person that wants to test out if they like ice fishing or an early season or a late season where it's not super cold or a backup unit. So Mike, if you were out fishing and your live scope goes down and you don't have it, this thing is, no bigger than a bobber. You can carry it around in your pack and it connects via Bluetooth to your phone. And 2 weeks ago, my buddy caught the Derby winner. He caught a 9-inch bluegill on it. So he was hole hopping with it, left his live scope bundle back at the hole and he caught the Derby winner. So it's a really cool device.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And, I do have a little insider information on Josh's setup. I have seen pictures and I can confirm it's pretty cool. It's a legit setup because like a lot of the comments that we got on those posts were like either A, you're going to lose your phone down the hole or B, your phone's going to die right away because it's going to just crush the battery being out in the cold. And his setup has effectively eliminated both of those issues. So, and it makes it's pretty simple to carry around too. It's pretty cool. So yeah, be on the lookout for that.
Yep. It's funny reading those comments. I'm sure you get them with all kinds of posts, but it's one of those where I took it to heart and it's like, I got to prove a couple of these people wrong because I want this thing is going to last all day. It's not going to get cold. And if I do dunk it in the water, it's going to float. So more to come.
More to come. We'll just give people a little taste on that. But
speaking of the Instagram, insider information, if you haven't checked out Josh's Instagram, I've seen some garage games on there.
Oh, yeah. So that started with, again, me and my buddy Travis. We were doing an annual fishing trip up north in northern Wisconsin in a small town, small ice fishing derby, and we were doing it 4 years in a row. And his parents retired and moved up there, and his dad has a really nice shop. And the first year when we started garage games, which was last year, it was cold and we wanted to go ice fishing. So I thought of a plan. I'm like, hey Travis, should I bring some long rods and we can kind of do some trick shots like you see on YouTube, on Facebook, on Instagram, where you can put a jig in a cup or a sleeve of some sort and see what we can come up with. And so last year was the first year that we did it just as a way to pass time because I think it was like 15 below that morning and we were just like, nope, we're not going to go out. So let's go down to the shop, go down to the garage and have some fun. And his dad walked in when we were doing one of our most complex shots, and it was a, I think it was a piece of duct tape swinging back and forth, and both of us got it through at the same time, and it just went nuts. So this year, which I posted 4 of the 5 so far, by the time everyone sees this, it'll be number 5, which I suggest you watch because the 5th one was crazy. And really what it is, you know, we just have our long rods out there. So they're about 7-foot bait casting rods with a jig and a trailer on it. And what the goal is just to pitch it through. And it's a competition between me and my buddy. And yeah, just a way to pass time when it's a little bit too cold out to go ice fishing and to keep things interesting.
I was watching that just like praying that I would someday be coordinated enough to handle a rod in a river like that, but there's absolutely no way.
Yeah, there's definitely an art to it. You know, I just picked up a bait caster probably like 3 or 4 years ago. I'm a walleye guy. I'm just spinning rod for life. And then I got introduced to bass fishing a little bit, and I was like, well, I better get a bait caster, you know? So got one, and then like 700 like knots or whatever you call bird them, nest. Like bird nests later, I've finally like started to figure it out. But I do enjoy them. But I have to say, like, so your buddy catches the winning bluegill, and you let him beat you in like pretty much every garage video I've seen so far. I haven't seen number 5. That's so nice of you to allow him to just beat you in everything that weekend.
Yeah, it was impressive. He had my number this year. So last year though, I think it was a little bit flip flopped, and but he's a good sport about it, and it's kind of cool. You know, if you've been in a part of any of these derbies, the one that we were a part of, it's a pretty small derby compared to, you know, some of the massive ones that you have across, you know, Battle on Bago or the one up in Minnesota. Some of those derbies are massive, but this one, you know, at the derby itself, there's probably only like 60 people, but we still manage to place just about every single year. And then win the door prizes, you know, they give away buckets of jigs and some tip downs, some coolers and whatnot. And it's just a really cool experience. So if you've never been a part of a smaller ice fishing derby, you know, people really need to experience those small town fishing derbies. The Rod and Gun Club, for example, put this one on and raising money for a good cause. So that's always fun.
Could we be a team? Could we do it as a team, you think?
If you want to lose, because I am probably the worst. Like,
not a chance.
No,
Ashley.
I have faith in you.
Okay, thank you.
Usually what happens is like I'll bring people out and they always catch the biggest one anyways. So it's like if we're in a fishing tournament together, it's a mortal lock. You will catch a bigger fish than me. It's the way that it goes.
So, Mike, when we meet, you know, this summer, because we're going to make it happen, we're going to have to do some, maybe it doesn't have to be in a garage, but you better get your bait casting skills on, because we're going to put them to the test.
Yeah, I'm going to have to do some practicing for sure. I do not have the finesse game down very well, because like, usually, like, when I'm using a bait caster, 9 times out of 10, I'm on a paddle board, because that's my jam. I love paddle board bass fishing. It's super fun. But like, I'm never doing that, like, casting under docks as much, you know. Like we have this like big boat slip next to us because like we're right next to a resort, and that's like the most structure around. So I do kind of chuck it around and sideways a little bit, but like the, what's the one where you like hang on to the lure and like you snipe it?
Yeah, so shooting, you know, like shooting a crappie jig, you know, you can pull it back, get the flex of the rod tip, and shoot that thing out, let go of the line, and it'll skip right underneath there. So
mm-hmm.
That
yeah.
just looks so cool.
I can shoot with a bow, but not with a rod. Not good at it.
Yeah, there's some of my friends that I've made through the industry of connecting with people on social media are down south more, like Missouri, like the Ozarks and stuff like that, where crappie fishing is huge, and they do a lot of dock shooting down there. And you should see those guys with their crappie rods. It's unbelievable. You know, they take this little crappie jig and they're able to fit it in this little hole and catch a nice 14-inch crappie out of it. Mike knows what that's about, though. He catches 14-inch crappies all the time.
You did put some slabs down.
No, I haven't.
I mean, what?
Okay, I actually have been doing doing pretty good. Yeah. My base camp fishery, it's been going in cycles. Like 3, 4, 5 years ago was really good. And then there were a lot of local guides that found out about it and a lot of other people that had live scope. And it's a notorious basin crappie lake. So they just kind of got pummeled. And then the populations went down quite a bit. This year's been really good for building up the fish. And for some reason, the schools of big ones have lived, and I've somehow found them. Because, like, the first three times I went out, the smallest fish I've caught was a 13-inch crappie. So it's been, like, pretty good. So, yeah, it's been fun. Let's just say that. But hey, let's switch gears a little bit. Let's talk a little bit about open water and your upcoming season. So, tell us a little bit about what you're excited for, what you got going on.
Yeah. So, I have some plans that aren't fully 100% set in stone yet, but what I want to do is get out and do a little bit more long form content. And, you know, I felt like I hit the niche of the short form stuff, which I'm still going to do. And I really enjoy doing it, but I really want to put to the test some more forward-facing sonar stuff. People really enjoy seeing that. You know, like Berkeley has a whole lineup of forward-facing sonar optimized baits. I want to get those out in front of my live scope and catch some walleye, catch some smallmouth. You know, I'm blessed that I'm not too terribly far away from the Bay of Green Bay, which has a phenomenal walleye fishery as well as smallmouth. You know, I'm hoping to top a 6-pound smallmouth this spring, which is just going to be crazy if I'm able to do that. But I was fishing with a buddy of mine last year, and you know, off the same spot that he was fishing, his buddy caught a 7-pound smallmouth the day before. So it's only a matter of time if I keep putting the time in out there. But yeah, I really want to try and get some more long form content put together, and hopefully get someone to help film it for me, because I, you know, Mike and I have talked about this time and time again. I have all these cool visions and ideas in my head, but I'm only one guy and I cannot film myself doing it. And a tripod just isn't going to do it. It's just not going to cut it. So to get that person that has that same vision, same eye as you, to be able to follow you around with a camera and catch some of that stuff, I mean, it's really a dream that I'm hoping that I can get to come true. So that childhood thing of having a fishing show that I told my dad I was going to have one of those days, well, I'm trying.
There we go. Is, you know, I tell you though, it's a lot easier with YouTube nowadays. You can create your own channel and you can make it what you want, but you still got to provide enough value and enough entertainment to get people to watch it. You know, you can say you got a fishing show, but if you got 4 followers, that's, I'm not quite sure if that qualifies as a fishing show or not.
It's a fishing show to 4 people.
It is. There you go. You know, it's all in the eye of the beholder, right?
I suppose.
Yeah. But the nice thing about that long form content too is, like, you can slice it and dice it into your short form stuff though. So you don't have to necessarily sacrifice, you know, your quick tips and stuff like that. It can just, you know, it can be part of the larger story.
Right.
Right. And I what I did this winter with some of my ice fishing stuff is, you know, and this is something I wanted to talk about too, because I have people reaching out to me, and I never thought this was going to happen, where they're like, hey, how did you become successful? You know, what kind of camera do you use? What kind of this and that? And, you know, what it really boils down to is this right here, this phone. 95% of my content on my page is shot with an iPhone. That's it. You know, do I have a drone? Yes, I have a drone, but you know, you can obviously tell where some of those pictures come from. And, but even my GoPro, I have a GoPro, and I find myself, I have a tripod for this. I have a chest mount for this. And that's where all of my POV shots come from that do so well of me catching stuff. Because when this is hands-free right here, you can tie a knot, you can catch a fish, you can hold it up, all that right in front of you. And so you don't need a special $1,500, $2,000, $600 camera, you already have the most vital tool that you need. You know, the best camera that you have is the one that's in your hand. And for most of us that have smartphones, it's right in your pocket. So it doesn't need to be complicated to make some of this content that I'm making. And all of the editing that I do up until this point is all done with free software. I'm not going out and you don't need this, you know, $1,500 worth of equipment and software to do what I'm doing. Anybody can do it. It's just making sure that, you know, it's relatable so that people can relate to it. And, you know, adding value, which I talked about a lot in the last podcast, and people are going to relate to that and they're going to see that and interact with you to ask questions, to have fun with you and to show their support.
Yeah. There really aren't a lot of technical barriers nowadays. Like no. You can create a YouTube channel. Most people have a phone and that's all you really need to show your stuff.
Mm-hmm. The only thing behind that is the drive and desire to do it. And some people, I think, get frustrated with not getting the interaction that they see other people have. And another thing and a problem with social media is it creates unrealistic expectations. And that's one thing that I try myself as a content creator to, you know, debunk, in the sense that some people only, it's the grip and grin. Here's, you know, the biggest fish that I caught of my entire trip. And that's the only fish you're going to see from that. Where as me, you're going to see some of the small fish, because some of my most viral content, if you will, that I posted on Instagram is of smaller fish. And, you know, I was talking to some buddies about that, and it's relatable. And it really is. If I'm going to go out there and catch a 11 inch bluegill or a 16 inch crappie every single time, how many people are actually going out and catching those? How many people are going to go out and catch a 7 pound smallmouth? You know, it's less than a 0.5% probably for all of those fish that I just mentioned. But if you go out and you catch a relatable size fish, people are going to be like, yeah, I can go do that.
I really appreciate that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I think you should have done some content with the hot dog.
Yeah, you know what? I actually did. So okay. that's on my personal Instagram, though. I put a little mashup together because, like, I do a pretty decent job of, like, documenting my day when I do stuff like that. Honestly, normally it's just, like, Snapchat videos I'll send to my family and stuff. But, yeah, documented that whole day. It was everything from, like, me... us, well, we didn't have fish right away, so the first part of the day was like me pulling the girls around on a sled and building some forts and having a pretty epic snowball fight, and then it turned to fishing. But yeah, it's just have fun with it. That's the that's the main goal.
Have fun and just be relatable and real about it. I think that's and you know people what? Know that authenticity.
Yeah, and honestly, that's the thing I appreciate most about your channel and your content is it is extremely relatable. Like, you're not in a $150,000 boat and going to the most epic fisheries in the whole world. Like, a lot of it is like around your home turf with, you know, what you got. So, and it's like people can do that. People can relate to it.
Yeah. I mean, I have the thing that I'm blessed with the most is I have a river that has a dam on it. So it's a reservoir that I can get to in about 8 minutes from here. Am I going to catch a state record in there of any species? Not a chance. But what I can do usually is I can go out and I can catch, and there's quite a few smallmouth, and that's one thing that I enjoy targeting. And, you know, I can catch an 18 inch, 19 inch smallmouth, which is a pretty dang good smallmouth for that system. And even the fish down to 15, 16 inch, which, you know, Mike, those are pretty old fish for, you know, depending on your body of water, those smallmouth take a long time to get that big. But I go out and catch those and create some really cool content that people can relate to. That, you know, I'm not going to go out and catch a 6 pound smallmouth every single weekend. It's just, you know, and another thing too, and I think Mike, you're doing a good job too, is, you know, we have families and I have kids, and getting them involved. And, you know, I'm really cautious about, you know, how much I put out there with my kids, just because, you know, this whole social media world, but, I do take them out quite a bit to expose them to the outdoors, to what's dad doing when he wakes up at 5 o'clock in the morning and he doesn't come back until, you know, 11 o'clock and, oh, he's got a bucket full of fish. It's time for a fish fry. Well, let's take the kids out and have them be a part of it too. And that's one thing that I commend you on, Mike, too. It's pretty cool when you take your family out there and have a successful day on the water.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I appreciate that. And, you know, it's just rewarding too, you know, like being able to share those passions with your family and get them like to kind of understand what you're all about for sure. And like seeing the look in your kids' eyes when they like are reeling up that fish and then it goes topside and it's flopping all around and it's like, oh, this is so cool.
That's how you start the next generation.
Yes, exactly.
You're gonna get me all emotional here, you know? Gosh, we don't have Kleenex.
Well, and that's part of the thing too, that my dad, I didn't get it. And I had actually wrote some notes about something that I wanted to talk about for some of the stuff that you maybe had on here, but he would take me fishing, and I'll skip over a bunch of the stuff, but he liked to tie flies. And so we didn't have a lot of money growing up. We didn't have a boat or anything like that to do traditional fishing. So what's, you know, a more affordable thing is to bank fish or shore fish. And there was a couple trout streams where I grew up that we would go fly fishing in. And once I got a little bit older, we would go to our spot that we would love to go to, and he would just sit there and watch me fish. And I'm like, what the heck, Dad? Like, why aren't you fishing? And, you know, I'm sitting there casting, and I catch one, and he's just smiling and laughing. And now I get it. And, you know, seeing my son do that, you know, and seeing that come first full circle, that's pretty cool.
Mm-hmm.
I love that.
Absolutely. Yeah.
That's so cool.
All right, Solomon, I feel like, you know, we talked earlier, and I feel like you're kind of chomping at the bit to ask a couple of questions.
Just because, you know, like I said before, I'm in the group of people that I'm about to talk to or about, but like the group of people that I'll just back up. I ice fish more than I open water fish, but I've open water fished a little bit the last couple of years. But like the different strategies there are, it's just, to me, it's intimidating. Just the amount of knowledge and gear that you can have. You don't have to have it, obviously, but like, can you break down some of the strategies that you use for open water? Whether it's like, well, soft plastic specifically is what I struggle with. I can pull plugs all day, like walleyes and stuff like that. That's as easy as it gets in my book, but like soft plastics and stuff like that, like, can you just break down some strategies you use for that?
Yeah, so, you know, hard baits are fun, right? Because you know, you can tie those on and you can just fish all day, and you usually don't have to worry about re-rigging plastic and stuff falling off, you know, when you're catching fish. But, you know, I mean, that's a broad question, you know, but if I'm, let's just narrow it down a little bit. If I'm smallmouth fishing, for example, the bodies of water that I fish tend to have a lot of wood and rock structure. So what I'm trying to do is I break it down when I'm heading out there with a hard bait if I can, and bring it over them, because I can fish that quicker. And usually when I'm on the water, I'm making the most of my time. And if that's not working, then I have to get out a jig and tie on a trailer, you know, some sort of creature bait or trailer, and flip it along there, where I can start bouncing that across the bottom. And another cool thing to do is if you know, I have live scope now, but to see, okay, I have a rock pile up here, I have a lay down or something like that, and they will hunker down and they're gonna right close to that structure, so that you can bring a jig right over top of that. But another thing, you know, a Texas rig is, I mean, you can't go wrong. There's so many different ways you can fish a Texas rig, and types of baits too. A stick bait, you know, your traditional Senko, your creature bait, and it's weedless. It stays really well off of wood, and you can fish it around wood, and you're just going to flat out catch fish. So fishing structure is a lot of what brings me success, and making sure that you have you know, match the hatch is true for many different reasons, because, you know, if you're getting the right type of plastic for that and the right type of color plastic for that system, whether it's, you know, crawfish or bluegill or, you know, shad or something like that, that those fish are going to pick up on that, and you put that bait even remotely close and it looks halfway decent, you're going to get bites. So, I mean, that doesn't answer the entirety of your question, but...
Well, you know, it was a broad question. You're exactly right.
It was a broad question.
It's like, I've never fished before, so tell you, no. But are you always looking for structure? Like, is that the first thing you're doing when you're going out? Is it you're
starting for that structure? Yeah, I mean, because that's how I learned how to fish. You know, I didn't... I didn't have a boat forever. I mean, I bought my first boat when I got out of college. I had to borrow some money from somebody to buy a boat, and my electronics were terrible. And so I was fishing, you know, pounding the bank and seeing that visible structure, you know, the laydowns and stuff like that, where I could cast to. I didn't know what was beneath me. You know, that was all I guessed. And so once I got live scope, you know, that opened up the world quite a bit. So I could fish offshore structure. And you know that, you know, if you're fishing this flat and all of a sudden right on the edge of that flat, there's a big rock ridge or a rock pile. You know it's going to hold fish, at least for majority of the year. And so picking apart that structure, hitting those high percentage spots is definitely the way to go.
Gotcha.
Mm-hmm. I've actually got a really good example of fishing with plastics that helped me.
Let's hear it.
So a couple of years back, I was on this camping trip with my family, and it's where two river systems met. One was a really big river, and then another one was like, you'd almost call it a stream. And, you know, I was talking with another camper, and they were like, yeah, oh yeah, I caught a bunch of smallmouth, and my eyes lit up like a Christmas tree. And I'd brought my rod, of course. We're staying at a campground where there's two rivers. I was like, all right, here we go. So I was just armed with my rod and a jig and a paddle tail. And I brought an extra jig and a paddle tail because I assumed I was probably going to lose them. And he told me, like, oh, don't go to the big river. Like that's tough. I mean, like if you got a boat, yeah, you can do that, but go to the small one, just work upstream. And this one was like, it was clear water and it was not very deep. It was probably like a foot on average everywhere, but it would have all these little holes like where current seams are. And there's like laid at like trees that would fall down and then create like a little bit of a dip behind it. So like taking those plastics and like pitching into the deeper holes and being able to visibly like see your bait and see how it works, that was like super helpful for me. Cause it was like, oh, that's how my bait acts down there. When I pop it at this certain amount, like this is how much it's going to move. This is how it's going to fall. This mm-hmm. is how I know to start picking it back up. And then the smallmouth would come out of the, like the little holes and just absolutely attack it. And like, they weren't very big. I think the biggest one I caught was like 12 or 13 inches, but man, they in a river system, those fish fight, you know, like a 13 inch smallie is going to fight the same as like a 3 pounder in a lake. That's so, awesome.
And you can see how your baits are moving too.
Yeah, like exactly. So anybody that really wants to get into fishing plastics, I recommend doing some sort of scenario like that.
Yeah. I definitely need help with the ones that you'd like. I'm so new to it, like the ones that you would drag across the bottom, like whatever that may be, whether it's like lunk logs or like the bandito bugs or that type of thing, that's what I'll be practicing a lot this spring.
Yeah, Ned rig, that one can be super successful, but also can be super frustrating at the same time.
Are those the ones that like stand up like that?
Yep. And so they're prone to snag ups if you're not fishing them in the right situations and whatnot. But
so what type of plastic are you putting on a Ned rig like that? Like what creature plastic?
They make many different kinds, but it's just that, I mean, Z-Man makes the little TRD, Guggen makes the Rattlin Ned, and it's just a little bitty stick thing. And it's just, it's the erratic action. It darts. It doesn't have any appendages or anything like that, but, yeah, I don't know why it's successful. I don't know if you got something to chime in on that, Mike. But it's interesting. It's just this little stick about this big, and yeah, the bass love it.
Yeah, walleye love it too.
Yeah,
mm-hmm.
Relax,
and you know, I
think
I think a lot about the Ned rig is just you have your bait in the zone in front of the fish's face for so long. It's like they're staring at it, and then all you really have to do is give it just the smallest twitch every once in a while. And it's like, okay, if you got your bait in front of a fish for 10 seconds, 30 seconds, a minute, like they have that much time to stare at it. And then you give it that little twitch and they're like staring right at it. It's like, okay, that'll trigger that strike. And one thing, I mean, This is definitely not the way to use a Ned rig, but I've actually had a lot of success taking like shiners and putting shiners on a Ned rig. Cause then it's like, well, you got a hunk of meat right in front of your face and yeah. They have a very difficult time resisting that.
Well, and that brings me to another point, like with plastics and you know, I've learned two through fishing with buddies that are, you know, been doing a lot longer than I have, you know, watching YouTube videos myself on new techniques, but a drop shot, which is crazy effective for many different species. And you can drop shot live bait and it's just dangling there, you know, and what that is it's in line, there's a hook and then there's a weight on the bottom, and then you're able to put a bait on there. But you can also drop shot live bait, like a shiner or a leech or a crawler. And that's super, super effective for bass, for walleye. And that brings me to that because we were doing that out on Mille Lacs for walleye with leech, and wow, they were loving it.
Mm-hmm. This is probably a dumb question, but like with the drop shot like that, is it something you're casting out and letting it sit there, or are you moving it along a little bit?
Well, I mean, what happens is that you're casting it out, you got to let it hit the bottom, and that's where it's in the zone. You know, that's the zone that you're targeting, is, you know, within that far of the bottom or whatever you want your depth to be. And then you just hop it along the bottom if you're blind fishing. I mean, if you're fishing with live scope, it's, you know, it's game over because you can tell where they are, how they're reacting to it, and then twitch it a little bit. It's nothing erratic that you're doing. It's more of your subtle slow roll techniques that get them to bite.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Drop shot with forward facing sonar is a lethal combination.
Yeah. We've got a lot of strategies I need to try out this spring. So. Mm-hmm.
Hopefully we've inspired a few people to pick up a rod and get out fishing, whether it's through the ice or open water. So, all right. Well, Josh, we appreciate your time. This has been a lot of fun, a lot of good banter, a lot of information. Hopefully people can take some good pointers out of this, whether they want to like start a channel and, you know, inspire others to fish, or maybe get some fishing tips, or maybe kind of tip them over the edge on buying that forward facing sonar unit, or, you know,
or getting started on the striker
or
cast.
just grabbing one of those striker casts and figuring out like what exactly the bottom looks like 70 feet away from the bank that you've been fishing that you don't really know what it looks like. So yeah, it's been.
And I'm going to be doing some cool stuff with Garmin, with all those products and whatnot. And I, to this day, you know, if you guys follow me on Instagram, you know, the listeners, I can answer any questions too. And I fielded tons of questions about it, you know, hey, can the striker cast do this? Hey, can the striker cast do that? Even people message me about, hey, what are your live scope settings? And I actually have a note saved in my phone that I can screenshot and send to people. And like, here's a good starting point, you know, so that you don't have to start from scratch. Just because they see my content and then they can relate to that, and they know someone that they can reach out to ask a question about that, or about Garmin specific products or what have you. So, and I'm more than happy to field any of those questions. So
that's awesome.
Yeah, I can definitely vouch for that, because we've done some collaboration posts, and you know, one thing about us at Shields is like we strive to have great customer service, you know, responding to everybody that, you know, has a comment or a question or things like that. And you know, have this collaboration post with Josh, and he's like answered all the questions before I even get in there. So it's like, all right, I like this. A plus customer service from Mr. Live the Legacy over there.
Yep. So cool. Well, I appreciate you guys having me, and hopefully we can do this. And if I get this cool project that I get to work on together, we're going to have to do a follow-up, because that's going to be pretty cool.
Yes, absolutely. Mm-hmm, definitely. So again, appreciate the time, and you know, good luck fishing out there.
All right. Sounds good. Have a good one, everybody.
You too. Thanks, Josh.
Thank you for listening to the Shields Outdoors Podcast. Stay tuned for future segments and visit our social media pages, Shields Outdoors on Facebook and Instagram, for daily updates.